This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Good afternoon. I'm Rich Bradbury and welcome to Enterprise Explores. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe from the headlines down to the bottom line. Today, Enterprise explores the complexities of digital fragmentation and how businesses can address it to unlock real business value. I'm speaking with Michael Bachmann. He's the head of architecture and AI strategy at Boomi. They're a software company that specializes in integration platforms as a service, API management, master data management, and data preparation. And if you're listening at home and you're quivering in fear, not understanding any of those terms, don't worry, we'll get to some of those in just a few moments. Now, in the world of business, data is the most important asset for virtually all organizations across all sectors. Thanks to advancements in technology, businesses have made significant advancements in harnessing the power of data, enabling them to collect, to analyze, and derive value from it like never before. Strategic utilization of data stands as a key catalyst for driving successful digital transformation, ultimately enhancing productivity, insights, and bottom-line profits. While data is increasingly valued in today's business landscape, many organizations struggle to bring out its full potential due to a common issue: data fragmentation. This fragmentation occurs when data is spread across various systems, locations, which can lead to inefficiencies in storage, compliance challenges, and management complexities. Safe to say, it becomes a headache. Now, with that, Michael is going to help us explore the impact of data fragmentation to businesses, strategies to overcome this hurdle for maximizing the value of organizational data, and the importance of offering the right governance and integration capabilities needed to weave AI into user experiences and business processes. If you have any thoughts, you can get us on our U-Mobile WhatsApp number. We're on 018-789-8899. Also, reach out to us on X. We are at BFM Radio. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, it's a pleasure having you over here first, but let's start off with the name. You know, for us here in Malaysia, it means one thing. And for you guys, does it mean the same thing?
You mean Boomi?
I mean Boomi.
Absolutely. Boomi is the Hindi word for earth. Mm. And actually, our founders of the company many, many moons ago wanted to make sure that that was essential to what we were doing, especially as you had this big move to the cloud. Mm. We wanted to ground our customers in technology so that they could move to the cloud and use the cloud effectively.
Right. Now, in that setup just then, I spoke a little bit about digital fragmentation. For those people, as I alluded to earlier, who are sat at home and might not understand what that means, can you just give us like a layman's description of what data fragmentation is?
Yeah, I think your comments earlier hit the nail on the head, but essentially digital fragmentation to us means that data is being created, it's being modified, it's being enriched, it's being verbed in a lot of different ways. It's being changed. And all of this fragmentation is coming from greater and greater resources. And what that typically means is that data is all over the place. Mm. In order to make it useful, you have to be able to bring the right data to the right at the right time for the right purpose to the right consumer. And the data that's out in the world today is, you know, we don't have as much of a creation of data problem. We have a curation of data problem. Right. And so what data defragmentation does, or consolidating this data to make it not as fragmented, means we want to curate the right data for the right time, at the right cost, for the right purpose. Mm.
So in my mind, I'm looking at data being received maybe from an iPhone, from an Android phone, from a PC, from a Mac, from somewhere else. And there are all these different formats all coming together under one roof, not necessarily meeting all the same criteria. Somebody then has to make sure that that criteria fits a single way of reading things, and then there's somebody else making sure that somebody else can read it, I guess.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. What it also means, too, in a business context, not just a personal one, is applications and services that we use in clouds all over the place, over which that many of us don't know where those clouds reside. There's data being produced and consumed all over. And if we're going to make purpose-built data that's purpose-built for a particular use case or set of use cases, we have to know not only where we're sourcing our data from, but how we're presenting that data along the way. Mm. And so the fragmentation problem that you're talking about really exists in a number of different places. I mean, we could talk a little bit about the numbers of how that works, but the idea in general is that in order for data to be useful, it has to be channeled accordingly. Mm. And if we don't have the right tools to be able to channel that data from wherever it is, it's not going to be too valuable. And I do want to quote somebody. Clive Humby came up with the thought of data is the new oil. And that was used in a context for different types of applications that would be using data on the web. That still holds today for artificial intelligence or machine intelligence. That holds for any type of application that's going to be using data appropriately for whatever the use case is going to be. What we do is we try to make sure, and everybody in our industry is trying to make sure that data is pipelined in a way that can be consumed in the right format, mm-hmm. as you were talking about before, in using the right protocols to be able to communicate with these applications thoroughly. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to use it not only, you know, to consume it in our own, let's say, business or personal use, but what do we do with the data afterwards? Do we store it? Do we do something different with it? Do we write it elsewhere? Those are all decisions that we have to make with that data to make it useful. Mm. And data becomes very unique to the person consuming it, because they're going to, you and I are going to consume our data differently.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So Malaysia has very ambitious digital economy goals. What kind of implications does digital fragmentation have towards businesses here in Malaysia with that in mind?
Yeah, so, you know, Malaysia is, I think, has a couple of different positions of strength. Malaysia's economy is getting stronger. The GDP is projected to be somewhere between 4 and 5% greater this year than it was last year. The focus on how a digital economy is going to play in Malaysia is certainly front and center from what I've been researching so far and what the team and I have been talking about. And the focus on AI, which is really where a lot of the data is going to feed those types of pipelines into machine intelligence. I think Malaysia is in a unique advantage because it doesn't lack the same type of legacy system or technical debt that many other countries do. This could give it a really good advantage to not have to reinvent stuff that's now, you know, kind of legacy at this point.
Yeah.
So I think from Malaysia's standpoint, the future is bright as far as I'm concerned. Businesses here, though, how they're going to be able to source and curate data, these are areas that really need to be focused on. And one of them is through solving the problem of fragmentation. So before I told you, there are some numbers that you know, we did commission some research on. The average business has roughly 364 applications in-house. That's a lot of applications. If you're a big enterprise, it could be an order of magnitude or more larger. Each one of those applications is sourcing or consuming data from a variety of different sources, and it's presenting or publishing data to a variety of different places. This is causing the splintering and fragmentation of data because each application is going to use data differently than other applications.
Right.
So, okay. Yeah.
We need to take a short break here. This is Michael Backman. He's the head of architecture and AI strategy at Boomi. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores. I'm Rich Bradbury. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines down to the bottom line. Today, we are exploring the complexities of digital fragmentation and how businesses can address it to unlock real business value. I'm here in the studio with Michael Backman, the head of architecture and AI strategy at Boomi. Michael, as businesses kind of strive to navigate this the complexities of digital fragmentation. What do you think are some of the key strategies and practices that these companies or businesses can integrate to get disparate sources and make everything more effective?
The first thing that I would say is raising it up a level. Why is fragmentation an important topic to tackle now? And that is because AI is going to be infused with any application for any business that's going to compete 3 years from now.
And it's going to snowball.
It's going to snowball. If you have fragmented data, if you don't understand your data, if you have fragmented not only data, but processes, business processes, software development processes, threads, anything that makes an application what an application needs to be, those sorts of things. If they're pipelining data from all over the place and we don't know what that data is useful for, it's going to make using AI more challenging. When we can defragment or integrate all of these different types of data sources knowingly, it gives us a goal, a purpose, and an objective to be able to use machine intelligence at a variety of levels. So if I know, for instance, and I'm going to talk to, you know, some business concerns out there, if you have sales in your business, which each business should. You would hope so. You're going to have a CRM system. You're probably going to have an order management system of some kind as well. They handle data fundamentally in similar ways, but yet the way the data is presented in each one of those types of environments could be useful for different means. Sales leaders, as an example, might want to see reports in detail about a sale so that they can forecast, whereas operations people or financial, the financial services in within an organization itself, those folks want to see what kind of actual billable revenue, as an example, is coming out of those CRM systems. So you might have different ways to look at the same data, and that needs to be presented accordingly. Well, you can apply AI to both or machine intelligence to both of those particular situations. But if you apply them without a goal, then you have a fragmentation of ideas, a fragmentation of resources, a fragmentation of the way the data is presented, and certainly a fragmentation of the digital pipelines that feed that data from the source to the ultimate consumer of that particular data. And so if that consumer is going to have AI in the middle somewhere, that consumer should probably have an idea of what kind of goals that she wants to have for that particular end.
What would you say then? I mean, there are companies out there, obviously, who have all of these systems that you mentioned. What are some of the common pitfalls that they fall into that creates fragmentation, you know, and how can they avoid doing that long term?
Yeah, so we have six tenets of AI readiness. And the reason why I'm focused on AI so much, Richard, is because this is essentially a technology that's going to be imbued in probably every process that we have in some way. And so with that in mind, the fragmentation that comes with all of these resources and the challenges that cause the fragmentation are, one, not knowing where the data is, two, not knowing why the data has been curated in a certain way, also just not knowing our data thoroughly. So that's one. The other is not knowing a process. The process by which you're gathering data and the process by which you're feeding data along a particular pipeline into a system, sometimes that's most of the time, it's either un or under documented. And I've interviewed hundreds of different leaders of business, and I've yet to see one leader say that 100% of their processes are documented, that 100% of their processes are known, that they don't really know 100%, do not say that they know where their data is, where it came from, how it's curated, what's happening to it in a pipeline. And these are the two of the biggest barriers to making technology useful. If you don't know your data and you don't know your process, you have fragmentation, plain and simple.
Let's just kind of move around a little bit. And Malaysians are not unfamiliar with data fragmentation and information and access to that data. There are particular websites that you have one website for this, you have one website for that. And there has been in the past few months this kind of discussion about moving all of that data into a centralized database, let's say, that stores your date of birth, your information, your phone numbers, how much you're paying for tax, all of those kind of things. Sure. under one roof. But there's also this idea that a level of trust, there's and transparency, as you kind of just mentioned there as well. When people kind of highlight these things and they talk about, well, we don't trust these guys with our data because we've seen data leaks. We've seen our numbers appear somewhere else. They're not being entirely transparent. We don't know which company created this kind of thing. When these kind of discussions come up, what do you say to people to kind of reassure them when they're in their head, they're already thinking, well, but AI is a little bit scary as well. And now you want to bring AI and play around with my data. This is a difficult discussion to speak to people who might not be as tech savvy as we assume them to be.
Yeah, and this is a big problem because, the old cliche, garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
And I'm going to bring up another cliche as well, which is, one man's trash is another man's treasure.
Yes.
That said, sifting through the trash to get to the treasure is a tedious process, and we have to do this now. Mm. Because anything that let me back up. Humans are good at patterns where we have a small amount of variables. Machine intelligence is great at picking out patterns where there are a large amount of variables and at scale and speeds that we as humans cannot fathom,
right,
that we can't deal with. And up until generative AI came out, this was largely done on structured data.
Yeah.
Okay, so tables, rows, columns, those sorts of things, right? The thing is, with the new generative models, it really works better on unstructured data. And the reason why I'm saying this is important in talking about data trust is because unstructured data is an area that we have been trying to make sense of for decades now. And we have this technology that can do that relatively easily. And this technology is designed to make stuff up.
Yeah.
So if we don't trust data in a structured environment, which is basically, I look at data engineers and data scientists and analysts as the folks who are actually picking through the trash, picking through the noise to find the signal, it's hard to find that signal.
Yeah.
Well, with unstructured data, you don't know where the signal and noise differ at this point because the system is so advanced and so convincing that if you don't have the right data, you are going to be told something by generative AI.
And you're going to believe it.
It's going to sound convincing, but it's hallucinating. Mm. It's not grounded. Mm. And so it's not boomied. So the idea is if it's not grounded, then you're more likely, and you believe it, you're more likely to do your business a disservice. Or even if you're not in business, if you're just you're at home and using AI personally, if you can't trust the data going into that model and training it, how are you going to trust the answers coming out of it? Mm. Well, even if it sounds convincing. So it's important that we pick through all of the data and really curate that appropriately. It's easier to do with structured data. It's really easy to do when we have rules that govern how the data is coming into the pipeline so that it's consumed by logic and consumed by artificial intelligence in a meaningful way. However, we really have to be diligent on that front end. Right now is the time where we need to do the painstaking work that we haven't done. Malaysia is no different. The thing with Malaysia and any other country on the planet that's dealing with data right now, whether you're in a business, whether you're in an IGO, whether you're you know, using and consuming data at a personal level is important to validate your where you're getting your data from. Document it. Understand where you got it from, when you got it from those particular sources. Make sure you run it through a way to validate that data in your pipelines of some kind. If you're a consumer, that will be difficult to do. If you are a business, it is critical because your customers are the consumers of the information that you're putting out. If you can trust your data feeding into a logical system like artificial intelligence, then you're in a much better place to have people trust how that data is consumed. If you don't know where that data is coming from, how can you trust the answers you're going to get from your systems?
Brilliant. Michael, hold that thought. I'm speaking with Michael Backman. He's the head of architecture and AI strategy at Boomi. This, of course, is Enterprise Explores. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores. This is the show that helps you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. Of course, I'm Richard Bradbury. We're exploring the complexities of digital fragmentation and how businesses can address it to unlock real business value. I'm speaking with Michael Backman, the head of architecture and AI strategy at Boomi. Michael, when we talk about the rapid pace of technological advancement, let's say. I mean, these kind of conversations were on the periphery 4 or 5 years ago. And even, I would say, 2 years ago, AI was kind of, for the general population, let's say, was something they'd heard about, you know, and it was one of those things that was futuristic. It was way off in the, you know, in the distance. Of course, the last couple of years, that has changed very rapidly, and that discussion about AI is now top of mind, and everybody is talking about it. I think I speak about it at least 4 or 5 times a day. The interviews that I have at least one element of AI in it somewhere. Now, with that in mind, how do businesses, when they have that in mind and knowing how rapidly things can change, how can they ensure that they stay ahead of the curve? How can they ensure that they're agile enough to move around to make sure that when something is implemented, they're ready for it? You know, they're already ahead of that curve, particularly here in Malaysia. And as you say, you know, we don't have a clean slate, but it's fairly clean.
Yeah, the nice thing about not having an inhibited landscape of technical debt is that you can move at speeds to catch up. If you don't have to worry about making sure that the consumers of all of the technical infrastructure that you've built up until now are taken care of in exactly the same way that some of these other countries have had to deal with, that we have to deal with largely in, you know, North America, in Europe, and all of those places. The wonderful thing about let's talk about network effects, and then I'm going to answer your question. So the cloud has transformed the way that information is curated and consumed. And you can basically have what appears to be local systems, even on your phone, any application that's built. The internet has connected all of these nodes all over the world. Those nodes all over the world are doing computations and persistence or storage of information, storage and retrieval of information at levels that simply weren't possible before, you know, the internet really was able to interconnect all of these different areas. And we turned this into the cloud. We're not only using other people's computers for the back end of our of our applications, but we're using infrastructure all over the place. This is where fragmentation comes in, and you need to really bring it all together in a meaningful way in order to make it useful for the next evolution of technology. You talked about 2 years ago and how this new technology called generative or Gen AI came into the picture. And ChatGPT turned everybody on their head when that tech came out.
Yeah, almost overnight.
Oh, it pretty much was. And I remember it was early November when it came out. Mm. And, you know, we're a low-code type of platform. And I remember commenting through our internal Slack channels saying, all code is now low-code. Mm. Anybody can be a developer at this point.
Yeah.
Not in the classical sense that everybody's a computer scientist, knows how to debug, which, by the way, is the role for the developer going forward, I believe. You're going to spend more time, for all of the developers that are listening in, you're going to spend a lot of your time as the senior developer in a pair programming relationship with your junior AI developer. And you're going to be doing more debugging and refactoring. For everybody else on the line where, you know, you're worried about or you're concerned about how this thing is going to change the way you do business, it already has started. Mm. Malaysia is in an interesting spot. And the reason why is Malaysia has adopted cloud-based technologies. So you've already skipped ahead of the decades of infrastructure and tech debt that most other companies have had to deal with, you know, if we're talking about different types of multinational corporations. And now we're at a point where you can take advantage of the shoulders of the giants who have come before and really build a new class of infrastructure built on this new technology. Mm. So Malaysian businesses are going to be able to, in my view, have a shot at outperforming or at least competing well against other established multinational corporations. Mm. So Malaysia, get ready. This could be fun and transformative for your economy. And I'm excited for what you can do. Now, that said, this technology called ChatGPT is just a service. Under that service is the actual type of generative model that's able to take in the data and really fill in the gaps of, you know, the questions that you're asking it. I do seminars on this with executives all of the time to give them an intuition. The idea about generative AI is not that it's magical. It's not that we cannot completely understand it, although we don't always understand how the answers are given. But we can say this, the more you know about the input, the more you know about the data that goes in to feed these systems, the more that you're able to put controls around how this data is being consumed by this system and these types of generative systems, the more you can control the output. And the great thing about generative AI is it can operate at speeds and scales that we can't. And even more importantly than any of the AI before it, this type of technology is emulating human thinking. Mm-hmm. What that means is we in IT no longer have to think as logical systems or think like a computer. The computer can emulate human thinking. And keep in mind, I am not suggesting that this type of tech is actually thinking. I don't believe it is. But I do think that I know that it's using a different type of search and retrieval of storage so that it feels like it's thinking for us. Mm. So we can ask a question in our natural language and it can give us a response that we expect. So am I saying that keyword lookup and keyword searches like we would if we're Googling, is that over? Maybe not. But I think we're getting closer and closer to that point. Mm. And so here's bringing it back to Malaysia. For businesses that want to have better customer experiences on their websites that they're creating, for instance, can use this type of technology and with the right type of tooling to pipeline the data into these language or linguistic models that we call generative AI, you can have far better outcomes for your customers, for your consumers, for the citizens of your country, if you're in governmental agencies, than other companies can have now or other governments and institutions can have for their constituents. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to give Malaysia a little bit of an advance or over maybe some of the other competitive countries in the region or even worldwide. Mm.
We touched on cybersecurity very briefly.
Yep.
Cybersecurity is a big issue, particularly here in Malaysia. We have seen a lot of leakage, let's put it that way. And I think that concerns a lot of Malaysians. And as I mentioned before, you have this technology that's advanced and for some a little scary. And you have this history of data leakage. And so cybersecurity is something that really is a priority for a lot of people here and businesses here in Malaysia. How do businesses ensure that there is data integrity and security built into the systems that they're using currently? And how do they, like, when we see AI developing so quickly and we know that it's capable of doing so many different things, how do we ensure that that security is there? And how do we then reassure business that this future tech that we're talking about and this future tech that is being integrated is not going to aid cybersecurity?
Yeah, the unfortunate nature of the situation is that there's going to be a cat and mouse game that's going to go on with tech. So I think we have to be vigilant with any type of security apparatus that we put, whether it's physical security or digital security, cyber. And, you know, no system is foolproof, especially if it's created by human beings.
Right.
We err, therefore our systems do too. That said, some of the traditional types of, you know, perimeter-based security, you know, controls with identity providers, you know, different passwords and identifier systems, those will probably continue on in their current form, at least at the onset. But I think this idea of a composable type of architecture where you have different types of security steps along each way of the pipeline is going to be essential to ensuring that security is controlled from data source all the way to final consumption of that data and in a reciprocal way. No time is it going to be more important than when we want to believe the systems as they're thinking like we are. So if you want generative AI to not become of a cyber problem and be more of a cyber solution, there are definitely pipelines that you're going to have to think about implementing along that track from the time you can use. If for instance, if you use an LLM and you use ChatGPT, I would advise anybody in any business organization to use that with information you're not afraid to lose. That is a service provided by OpenAI in this particular case, but anybody offering a type of chat service on top of a model, that's their application. They can control how the data flow is it goes there, and that creates a lot of leakage opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we've seen plenty of examples of this worldwide. Big companies.
Yeah.
And we don't have to name those companies right now, but the idea is it's important to be able to control that. Well, there are ways of controlling that. So for one thing is if we have a composable type of architecture, which means I have a way to create modules, if you will, that we can snap together different fragments of a pipeline to one, make sure that you can control who's accessing data, two, where the data is coming from, three, what happens to the data along the way in that particular composable node, performing validation checks on that particular data so that if it is going to be consumed, it's consumable to only the right next stage in that particular data supply chain. Yeah. And that's the start of it all. We want to control who has access to what and at all stages of the pipeline, and at least to be able to observe and monitor where that data is in its curation cycle before it's being consumed by the, you know, machine intelligence system or the rule system in any way.
Okay. To kind of close our conversation for today, as we've just mentioned, businesses are becoming more increasingly reliant and have to be, I guess, on cloud-based solutions. How can cloud integration platforms like Boomi help alleviate this challenge of data fragmentation and facilitate seamless data management across all these various environments that we've spoken about?
Great question. The one thing about our particular platform, which might be divergent from cloud-only type of systems, and if we want to get into security questions as well, controlling the data flow, regardless of where it's coming from, is something of our specialty. And so what we want to do is give our consumers the ability to control data that's coming from an on-premises environment, as well as a cloud-based system, and have as many or as few of those data controls or data flows that we want. Those are called runtimes, and our customers can control where those are placed, which means if you have your own security paradigm, you can put our runtimes wherever you want. Now, that said, for consumers to be able to take advantage of, you know, fragmented data and to defrag that data in a meaningful way for whatever system, the idea is to be able to have a composable architecture where, you know, basically it doesn't matter if you're in the cloud or on-prem, you want your data to conform to the rules that you give it.
Yeah.
And so our consumers are going to have the ability to do that at every stage of their pipeline. If you're using other consumer products or other products that are meant to do pipelining as well, make sure that you have full control over where the data flow goes. Mm. And if you have that, then you can control what's being presented to a system of intelligence of any kind, so that whoever is consuming your data can be more reasonably assured of, you know, whatever answers you're going to provide. Mm. Those are key characteristics to how this type of tech needs to work. And I'll say one more thing, Richard. If you're using any type of cloud-only system, just remember, that's not where all of the data lies. It is important to be able to access data wherever it is on whatever system you have, even if it is a legacy system. And that data is valuable. Also, AI it doesn't have all of the data about humans that it really needs to make unbiased decisions. Mm. So I want to just briefly talk about the security, not just security, but also responsibility of data control in your own system. So it's important to know where the data is coming from, like we've talked about. It's also important to know how that data was actually derived.
Yeah.
Not just the source of the data, but what kind of bias is in that data? Mm. It could be statistical bias. Mm. Or just to give you an example, if you are a medical company, a lot of clinical data is coming from research, and doctors are going off of research where your local population might not have had enough data to be consumed, yet an AI system is trained on data from the Western, from Western medicine.
Yeah.
That might be an example of where you want to really scrutinize where the data is coming from before you offer a generative AI response in your system. Mm-hmm. These are all controls that need to be placed along the way, not just in a security sense in data leakage, but also a data bias sense as well. So these are important things that we need to think about. And the last thing I'll mention with regard to pipelines is if you document, I'm just going to hit this home over and over again, document, document, document. I don't want to sound hyperbolic here, but I think we're making leaps in technology so rapidly right now. I really think that we have a chance to get the data right, to get our processes right. In order to do that, we've got about 3 to 5 years before these systems become so advanced that we already live by a lot of algorithms from social media systems. Just imagine with generative AI, how many more algorithms we're going to live by. We want to get the data right. Again, the garbage in, garbage out means if we don't understand our data, it's all signal and noise mixed together going into a system that we're trying to trust. And if we can't trust that system and it's going to be helping us run society better, we might be in a society that we don't want to be in 5 years from now. It's important that we get the data right now.
Michael, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Richard.
It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you. Of course, ladies and gents, that was Michael Backman, the head of architecture and AI strategy at Boomi. If you missed any part of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast wherever you normally get it from. I recommend downloading the BFM app. That's available in the Apple App Store or Google Play. I'm Rich Bradbury. Keep it here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.